This happened when I was around 9 years old. I'm 25 now, and it's something I'll never forget. It still gives me goosebumps to this day. I live in a terraced house, and my neighbors and I have our own little patio. There's a small road 10 meters from my yard where people do their Sunday walks on. Only a small fence separates my small yard and a patio from that road. I live in a pretty crowded area, with several of these terraced houses spread around in my neighborhood. So seeing people walking on that road is pretty normal for me. Seeing random people standing on my patio is not. When I was 9, I usually got home from school about an hour before my mom got home from work. I lived maybe 50 meters away from my school, so my mom figured I was mature enough to be home alone. It was only an hour or so before she got home. So this one day, I got home from school. I did the usual thing, which was to make sure that I locked the front door, and double check that the back door leading to the patio was also locked. Then I rushed up to my room upstairs to play as much PlayStation as possible before my mom came home and would make me do my homework. While playing, I heard this noise coming from outside my window. It was kind of like the sound of a cat, but my cat had been missing for over 3 months. Hope sparked within me, and I thought, oh my god, did he finally come back? I ran downstairs to check if it actually was my cat. The sight that met me gives me goosebumps again just writing this. There's a guy standing on my patio, a very tall man with black hair covering half of his eyes, making him look like a male version of the Ring Woman or something. I could hear him making this high-pitched sound, almost like a cat meowing. A brown liquid was running down from his mouth, and I could see him spitting out my dad's stomped cigarettes. He was actually eating from the ashtray. I was frozen, observing this. Eventually, I snapped out of it and screamed so loud that the man must have heard it. He didn't react, just kept eating from the ashtray outside. I ran upstairs to my room, locked the door, and called my mom, who then promptly called the cops. I've never been more terrified in my life. Laying in my bed, under my sheets, shivering with fear. As I continued to hear these high-pitched noises from that guy, eating cigarette stumps from the ashtray on my patio, I kind of blacked out for a moment, because the next thing I remember is the police arriving on the road by my yard. I hear them talking to the guy, saying stuff like,
"Sir, what are you doing? Get over here or we will come down and arrest you,"
and so on. The man did not respond, but the high-pitched sounds was more frequent and got louder and louder. I then decided to look through the window, feeling safe that the cops were there now. I could see two police officers standing by my fence, one man and a woman. I no longer saw the creepy man, however, because he was standing directly one story under me and out of my field of view. The police jumped the fence, and I remember hearing that creepy man screaming louder than I'd ever heard anything before. He charged at the female officer with full force, and he knocked her out cold. The male officer then immediately tased the guy, leaving him shaking on the ground, still screaming. The policeman struggled to keep him on the ground while putting handcuffs on him, but eventually he did. After a little while, he managed to wake up the female police officer, who seemed to be badly hurt. He called for backup and an ambulance. And then he sees me standing in the window above him. The expression on my face must have been something else because he just looked at me and said, "I sure hope you didn't see all that." Then I started to cry. By this time, neighbors started to arrive wondering what the hell was going on. One of my neighbors, an elderly woman, made me come down. She took care of me until my mom came back home. The police then took the creepy guy with them in their car and left. But they promised they'd come back and talk to us about what had all happened. This is where my story takes an unexpected turn. The male police officer came back later that night and sat down with me and my mom to talk. He explained that the guy on my patio was actually diagnosed with severe autism. He had escaped from a facility where mentally challenged people lived. It was located around 5 kilometers where we lived. He explained that that guy had actually been living in my house 5 years ago, but then he'd been forced to move when his mom and his only caretaker died. Poor guy probably thought he was going to find his mom in my house. He missed the routines, and he missed living there with his mom. The police had to move him from the house that time 5 years ago, because he was extremely strong, and this was the reason he reacted the way he did when the police came that day. Still frightened, I told the police officer that they needed to make sure that this would never happen again, and he promised me that it wouldn't. After a few sleepless nights, my life kind of went back to normal, And the years went by, and that man didn't come back. That was until 1 year ago. At this time, my mom and dad had moved out. I bought that house from them, and I'm still living there today. I was enjoying my morning coffee on the patio when I see this random guy stopping on the road by my fence. He just stood there, staring at me. I look at him and give him a nod, and then I hear it. Those same high-pitched noises. Holy shit. It's him. His hair had turned gray, but the high-pitched sounds made me realize who it was. My heart started racing, and I instantly remember the reason why he was back. I realized that he must have managed to escape again, but because I kept my cool a bit longer than when I was 9, I started to realize how sorry I actually felt for the guy. 16 years later, and he was back to look for his mom. I decided to carefully ask him if he wanted to come down to the patio. He instantly jumped the fence. I started to think maybe he would knock me out like he did to that one police officer. He didn't. He just smiled. He looked at me and smiled. I offered for him to sit down, and he didn't respond. I offered for him to come inside, and he just started laughing. So we ended up going inside. His face lit up, pure joy. He was home. It reminded him of the life he had with his mother. It actually almost made me tear up. All of a sudden, he sat down on my couch, turned on my TV, and switched directly to the cartoons. I sat and observed him for a while. He was just completely focused on them. I wanted him to just enjoy the moment, so I didn't say anything. I realized I had to call that facility and let them know what was going on. The caretakers arrived 10 minutes later. After a lot of convincing, he got back up, crying, and went back to the facility. I called the facility 2 days later, and we made a deal. His name is Tom, and I now consider Tom my friend. Every Sunday from the day he returned, Tom and his caretakers visit me to watch cartoons. They tell me it's the highlight of his week. It makes my heart warm. Now, for several years, my thoughts were, let's not meet guy on my patio eating from the ashtray. Now my thoughts are, let's meet every Sunday to watch cartoons with my friend, Tom. I was 14 years old, and it was just an average night, and it was around 9 p.m. Myself and my little cousin are at his house, and I'm babysitting for the night while my mom and aunt are shopping and my dad and uncle are at the movie theater. As we're sitting there, I started to feel really strange, like something was wrong, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it, so we just kept watching TV. That same feeling wasn't going away though, so I got up and walked to the back door to lock it. And when I came back through the kitchen, I saw what was causing my weird feeling. In the window, there's this very decrepit and homeless looking man, just staring at us. Protective mode turned on immediately, and I pretended like I didn't see that guy, and told my little cousin that we needed to go upstairs, because our parents would be home soon, and they wouldn't want him staying up so late. We went upstairs, and I put him to bed, knowing damn well that there was a man outside, and I think that he wanted in. I was about 125 pounds and 5'8 at the time, and I played football for my school. If I remember correctly, I went downstairs and straight into the kitchen and grabbed one of those meat tenderizing hammers, turned back to the window, only he now wasn't there. I ran back to the front door and made sure that it was locked. Both the deadbolt and the knob were, and ran back upstairs with the meat tenderizer. I went into my cousin's room and sat down in front of the door. He asked me what I was doing, and I told him not to worry about it and just to keep his head low. I called the cops, and then my dad and uncle. The cops were at least 30 minutes out, and my dad and uncle were 45 minutes. Then I heard it, a window shatter, and the sound of heavy boots walking around on our main floor. Quietly told my cousin to stay calm and hide under the covers and keep silent. I could hear that man walking around downstairs. It was horrifying. I gripped that damn meat tenderizer and just waited. Maybe 5 minutes or so pass, and then I hear the boots walking up the stairs. At this point, I was having a freaking heart attack. My cousin's door is no more than 10 feet from those stairs. I heard him opening up the door to my aunt and uncle's room, then the bathroom. He walked back downstairs, and I heard him open the door to the basement. 15 minutes later, the police showed up and burst into the house. It turned out that the guy was loose from a mental hospital one province away. I nearly had to battle a mental case when I was 14. And at one point, I was no more than a wooden door and 10 feet away from him. My parents started leaving me and my sisters home alone when I was around 13 or 14. Of course, the rule was to not let anyone we didn't know into the house. One night, there was a knock at the door. I went to the door and tried to look out, but I couldn't see anything. We couldn't pretend that we weren't there because the lights and the TV were both on. I opened the front door a crack, thinking that the person would be behind the screen door, but that wasn't the case. There was a man in his late 20s or early 30s just standing in our doorway. I shut the door quickly and told him to get behind the screen door. He obliged, and I cracked the door. Yes, I wasn't very smart, and latched the screen door. He told me a story about his vehicle breaking down the road and needed to use a phone. I said that I couldn't see his car, and he indicated that it was further down the road. Then I asked him why he walked past two houses right next door, and then walked to the one with no car in the driveway, and I could see that he was becoming agitated. Here's a general recollection of that conversation.
Look, are you gonna let me use the phone or not?
No, my dad is sleeping, and I can't let you go into his room to use the phone.
Okay, just bring the phone here, and I'll use it then.
I'm not letting you in the house.
Just bring the phone to the door.
It won't reach. Please leave.
Okay.
I shut the door and lock it. And while my sister and I are talking about how scary that was, the side door handle begins to jiggle. That same man knocked and says,
"Hey, will it reach this door?"
At this point, I tell him to go to the neighbor's house and use their phone. And he starts to yell,
"I bet your dad's not even home. Let me in. I want to talk to him."
I told him, "Fine, I'll go get him." Then I went to my dad's room, got his shotgun, came out and racked it and said, "Here, meet my dad." The same man started cursing and calling me names, but he did leave. At least that's what I thought. He actually had gone around to another door and tried that one. Our dog, who was outside at the time, began barking at him. He proceeded to do something that made my dog yelp and cry out. I screamed out that I was calling the police, and he finally left. I felt really stupid for the entire interaction. I don't know if he was just a guy who needed a phone, but that whole experience was very creepy, and I was obviously ill-prepared for dealing with it at such a young age. This story happened to me back when I still lived at my parents' house. I was commuting to college at the time and had three siblings that also lived at home, my brother and two sisters. For some context, we lived on 5 acres in rural Ohio, surrounded on both sides by woods and farm fields. Additionally, during the week, my dad would normally leave for work around 2 a.m., so I always felt like it was my job to be the man of the house because he was gone during the times when you would imagine something sketchy happening. However, on this night, because it was the weekend, my dad was actually home. I woke up to the sound of my brother's voice trying to get my attention. We had separate rooms, but if you came out of our room, you could look down over the banister and see our front door. When I woke up, it took a few moments to get out of that haze and realize what was actually going on. I looked at the clock and it was around 2:30 a.m. My brother told me that there were two men at our front door. Now this really woke me up. We quietly walked out of my room to peek down and look down to the front door. When we looked, there was no one at the door, but I noticed my parents off to the side and out of view of the glass on that front door. I whispered down to my dad, and he told me that there were two guys who had been talking to one another and knocking at the door. Hearing my dad say this freaked me out even more. I went back into my room and grabbed my pistol, quickly shuffling down the stairs after looking to make sure that they were still not at the door. If they had been, they would have easily seen me coming down the stairs, as it's in direct view. My brother is right behind me as we head over to where my parents are, whispering to my parents to find out what was going on. Parents had awoken to the sound of our dog barking, only to find two men knocking loudly at the door. At this point, those two men return and began knocking again. Despite the fact that no one had came to the door the first time, or that our dog was still actively barking at them, and also the fact that they were there at this time in the night, so late, and in a location where houses are spread out hundreds of yards away from each other. And again, knocking with the dog barking, it just made the situation even more terrifying. After a couple of minutes, the men walked away, and we all shuffled across the kitchen and into the family room to peek out those windows into our driveway. There was a black Cadillac sitting there, but no one was inside from what we could see. Immediately, the question was, where did those guys go? They weren't in their car, and they were no longer at the front door. We would quickly get an answer to the question we just asked. All of a sudden, the handles to our back French door started jiggling, and they were actively trying to enter the back of our house, which entered into the kitchen. At this point, I just remember my mom frantically saying, "David," to my dad, as pure terror overwhelmed her. Then two things happened. Adrenaline filled my body as I prepared my handgun, horrified at the very real possibility that I might have to shoot these men. Secondly, my dad finally grabbed the phone and called the police and calmly told them what was happening. Thankfully, after a minute of jiggling, they stopped at the back door and disappeared once more, only soon to be back at the front door, knocking once again. After a few minutes, we suddenly saw the local police fly up in multiple cruisers with their lights turned on. As they whipped into our driveway and into our front yard, the two men bolted and attempted to run the long way around the house across the driveway. One of them disappeared out of view, but the other one was intercepted by an officer yelling for him to get on the ground. He didn't. He was immediately tased and fell. A few of the other officers went around the house after the other guy, and one of them came to talk to my dad and I as we came outside. They ended up finding the other man hiding in my sister's little playhouse in the backyard. It appeared that both of them were either drunk and or high, as the one who hid had cocaine on him. While they were both arrested that night, we never did find out what they were charged with or what happened to them. Needless to say, that whole experience wasn't fun. So to the random men at our door in the middle of the night, let's not meet again. The first house I moved into out of high school while going to college was a very old small house in a town that dated back to the Civil War. I lived there with three other guys since rent was really high, but we made it work. The house itself was built on a hill and had a small driveway in front with a U-shaped driveway in the back. It had a full basement and was owned by someone with multiple rental properties in that area. They told us that we had full access to upstairs, but they used downstairs for storage, and to never go down there because it was full of their stuff. We never really questioned it, because the rent for this particular location, especially for our area, was low. We were still technically on campus, but our house was surrounded by other college students, so we could have parties whenever we wanted to. Everything was great until we started having unwanted visitors. At first, things were pretty easy to ignore, or easy to write off. A roommate home by themselves would walk into a room, and the lights would be on when they were home alone and hadn't flipped any of the switches. Or someone would hear a faucet turn on and off in a room with no one inside it. We tried to do what little research we could at the time and found out that water pressure can cause faucets to do some crazy things on their own, and also that power surges can do similar things with flickering lights. Unfortunately though, things kept getting stranger and stranger. At one point, one of my roommates who was home alone got out of the shower and looked into the mirror to start shaving. He noticed someone else stepped out of the shower behind him and left the room. He searched the entire house but couldn't find anyone else inside. Later on, a different roommate had several items go missing out of his room, including his keys and pocket knife. He later found them in our microwave. Again, no one was home at the time. Me personally, I got home on a day when nobody else was at the house for a couple of hours in between classes. There was a folding chair on the front porch next to the door, and I had an armload of books. I set the books down on the chair, unlocked and pushed open the front door. I bent down to pick up my books, and the door was slammed in my face. I thought maybe the wind had caught the door and then went to open it, but discovered that the door had locked itself again, both the handle and the deadbolt. Last of all, three of us were sitting together on a couch watching TV, when we heard a loud, heavy thud, as though something had been dragged off into a back bedroom. All three of us later confirmed that we distinctly heard both footsteps walking through the house, as well as the sound of something heavy being dragged. Last of all, the back door opened and slammed shut, even though we were all inside the living room, and there was supposedly no one else in the house. Around a week later, we started to smell gas inside, and we called the authorities in the middle of the night. They searched the house, with us waiting on the front lawn. They finally came outside and told us they couldn't find any kind of gas leak, and then asked us to open up the basement. We had never been down there because of our landlord's request, but since the fire department was asking, we opened the garage door. Right in front of us was a Honda Shadow motorcycle with a large pool of gasoline underneath it, where the tank had apparently leaked underneath it and the rest of the house. The firefighters saw this and decided to leave, while we were left to look around the rest of the basement. Most of what we found was shelves and shelves of canned food, but in the very middle of the floor, which was underneath everyone's bedrooms, we found an embalming table, some sort of second device. I'm still not sure what the second device was. It was cylindrical, with a small viewport in the front door, and it seemed to have some places on the back for hoses or pipes to connect to it. Although nothing was attached when we found it, it was around the size of 2-liter bottle sodas. Soon after, we would come to find out that our landowner worked night shifts at a local hospital. Whatever it was or whatever was going on inside that house, we decided that enough was enough, and we all decided to move out as soon as our lease was up. Unfortunately, I was the last one there, and I promised that last 7 days I spent there alone were the longest days I spent anywhere since. I'm a self-described cynic, and I don't believe anything when it comes to the supernatural. But I can also admit when I have absolutely no explanation for a set of events. I'm sure the Reddit scientists will be able to explain everything that happened to me, now that many years have passed. But I don't really need their explanations anymore. I just accept that being in old houses alone is not a good idea, and still to this day, I do my best to avoid them altogether.
Maybe 2.5 years back, I met a chick at a bar. She had been stood up and I just knocked off for the day. I didn't go there with any idea to score. I just wanted a couple of pints to help me unwind. I'd been there for around 45 minutes when the bartender slipped me a note. It was from a girl sitting at the end of the bar. She asked me to grab a table with her so we could talk. My curiosity was piqued, so I looked to my right and locked eyes with possibly the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. I thought that maybe I'd been given the note accidentally. No way a girl that hot was interested in me. To make sure, I pointed at the note and then mouthed, "Was this for me?" Then pointed to myself. To my amazement, she nodded yes. That's where our evening began. I grabbed a quiet table in the corner and she joined me. We introduced ourselves before getting to the small talk. Her name was Amber, and she was 25. Close up, she was even more beautiful than I thought. I asked her why she'd written the note. I was genuinely curious. While I'm not a walking mess, I was nowhere near her level. The possibility I was being tricked came to mind, so I asked if I was being pranked, but she said no. It wouldn't be the first time. My friends seemed to think it was funny that any girl would like me. They put notes on my windshield at least twice, pretending to be from a secret admirer. I never fell for it, though. I'm far smarter than they think I am. This, however, looked to be a real encounter. If it was, I was going to play it all the way through. The getting to know each other continued another half hour until she asked if I wanted to take her home. I jumped on it, and we walked a few blocks to my apartment. We had a few more drinks and started messing around. I don't kiss and tell, so I'll just say we enjoyed one another's presence for the rest of the night. When I awakened the next morning, she was already gone. I wrote it off as just an amazing dream and hit the head. When I came out, a pair of beer bottles caught my eye. I walked over to get a closer look. One had lipstick residue on the mouth. I still wasn't positive. I walked over to the bed and sniffed the pillow opposite to mine. The wonderful smell threw me back to the previous evening. There was no doubt. It had really happened. I was over the moon for a long time. I hoped to see her again. I went as far as asking some employees if they knew how to find her, but none did. As time went by, however, I wrote it off as just a one-night stand. I began dating a new girl, a wonderful, fun chick to be around, but Amber stayed in the forefront of my mind. This new relationship never really went anywhere, and we ended things a few months in. Being newly single, I had hoped to track Amber down and maybe pick back up where we left off. I returned to the bar and asked around again. I got the same answer. I didn't have the money to hire a detective. Without a last name, I couldn't even do a search on the internet. Providence would arrive in the form of Craigslist. I was browsing the site and came across the missed connection section. It looked to be just as good as any other avenue, so I made a short description of our night together and how I'd like to meet up again. I posted it and went on with my life. All was quiet until day 8. A message came from someone claiming to be Amber. I asked a few questions. They knew all of the answers and even added things no one else could have known. I was overjoyed to be talking to her again and asked if we could meet for drinks. She agreed and suggested the place where we first met. It sounded perfect, almost romantic. I started to believe this may go somewhere. My months-long search was over. For the rest of the week, my stomach was in knots. I was counting the hours. Saturday eventually arrived and I made my way to meet her. She was visible from outside and more beautiful than I remembered. I joined her at the table, and the night went as much as it had on our first meeting, all but one thing. Throughout the evening, she checked her phone many times. I assumed that she was just nervous and tried to ignore it. It was a few hours before she then suggested we go back to her place. I'd been looking forward to this for months. On our way out, I visited the bathroom. As I walked away, I noticed that she was fiddling with her phone again. However, now she was making a call. I didn't care. Besides, maybe she was just calling her roommate. She was basically a stranger to me. For all I knew, she had kids. Once again, I didn't care. I mean, she'd hung up by the time I returned anyway, and we made our way to her car. I stumbled my way down the street until she pointed at this plain four-door sedan, and I then shuffled up to the passenger door. She unlocked it, and I fell into the seat. We closed our doors, but instead of starting the car, she just sat there looking at me and smiled at me. Oh, maybe she wants to make out. The idea perked me up. When I leaned over to kiss her, a strange male voice told me to stop. What? I was so drunk that I had a difficult time assessing the situation. I turned my head to the back seat and saw a large masked man pointing a gun at me.
Don't make me shoot you, cowboy!
Instantly, I sobered up. I could tell that he meant every word. I looked over to Amber. Our eyes met, and I knew I'd been tricked. They were cold, lacking any empathy. I was devastated. I lost my desire to live at that very moment. Moving much faster than I should have, I yanked my wallet from my pocket and threw it into the back seat. I think my nonchalance caught the man off guard. He said nothing, even as I stepped from the car and slammed the door. I didn't know what to do, so I just stood mute, staring at the pavement. It remained quiet for around 30 seconds until I heard the car start and then speed away. It wasn't long before I had a massive adrenaline dump. The seriousness of what had occurred mere minutes prior hit me like a truck. I hunched over and began vomiting. Massive amounts of booze and nachos poured from my guts. I eventually ran dry and returned to my feet. I wiped my mouth and made my way home. I wanted nothing but to sleep, and I didn't even bother to undress before falling into bed. Most of the day was gone when I woke up. I chugged a bottle of Gatorade, which was my hangover cure. The events of the previous night became clearer by the second. I felt so stupid. All the time that I'd wasted looking for her. Then I got angry, and my desire for revenge kicked in. A quick shower and a 2-mile walk later, I found myself following a report. In Chicago, stick-ups generally don't get much attention. When the detective handed me some mugshots, I got the idea that I'd stumbled onto something a tad more serious. I was shocked to see the faces of Amber and her accomplice staring back at me. I pointed them out, and the detective gave me the lowdown. Only at that moment did I realize just how lucky I'd been. According to him, I had fallen prey to a scam. Amber's real name was Shannon, and she'd been a career con artist. The pair had been targeting single men for the last 6 months or more. I was thought to be their fifth victim, and the previous three had been killed. I felt a shudder through my body. The detective was unsure why I'd been allowed to live. That made two of us. Perhaps our history made me too much of a risk. Maybe she'd been pressured into doing it by her partner. I'll probably never know. It was hoped that I had some new information to give him, but I ended up being no help. We spoke a little longer before he sent me home. Now I was even more confused. I was happy to be alive, but on the other hand, however, I wonder why I'd been spared. I have one particularly funny theory, that they didn't consider $23 on a maxed out card worth killing over. But the truth is, it's not really a joking matter. Things wouldn't get any clearer when Amber's accomplice was arrested. He'd been brought in on unrelated charges, only to lawyer up the second he was asked any questions. He'll stay mum more than likely, even when presented with the possibility of execution. The detective on my case thinks Amber probably won't be caught for a long time, and even if she is, she'll go the way of silence too. If and when she's caught, I hope I can get a few minutes alone with her. Not because I wish her any harm. I've come to terms with her role in the crime. Instead, I'd like to ask why I was spared when others weren't. I'd like to think it's because we made some type of connection on an emotional level. Then again, that's probably just my romantic side thinking out loud. In truth, it probably just wasn't my time.